The Senate will please come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger,
here.
Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Ferger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
A quorum being present, we will post the colors. The Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Senator Mark Hass.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our invocation this morning is from Pastor Charlie Brown of the St. Andrews Presbyterian Church in Beaverton.
Thank you for the opportunity to be with you today. You've been given a great responsibility in serving those of us who live in Oregon. Let us pray for your work. Creator and giver of life, we give thanks for the opportunity to use our gifts and skills in helping to care for your creation and all people. May we strive to do those things which will bring wholeness and opportunity to aid all people in living their daily lives. Grant us wisdom to care for not only the powerful, but also for the lowliest. May we learn from and listen to those with whom we share a common goal, but differ in how to achieve it. We have all come to this time to give the very best answers, policies, and programs in meeting the needs of the people we serve. We thank you for those with whom we serve. Help us to love one another and to love those whom no one loves. In the name of our Creator and in Jesus, we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Charlie.
You're welcome. Thanks,
Rick. Courtesies of the Senate. Remonstrances. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I'm going to speak before his side. Senate Bills 8, 9, 16, 24, 36, 44, 47, 102, 103, 112, 118, 121, 123, 125, 129, 132, 152, 170, 171, 173, 180, 181, 182, 187, 195, 198, 200, 203, 205, 208, 220, 227, 235, 275, 277, 287, 303, 323, 327, 348, 374, 377, 378, 381, 383, 400, 401, 404, 44, 623, 731, 771, SCR 12 and SCR 13.
Reports from conference committees. Reports from standing committees. In accordance with SR 855.1, committee report summary number 125 was distributed to members today. This information will be recorded in the journal and the status report. So ordered. Reports from special committees. Chair recognizes Senator Richard Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President, Senate colleagues. Senate Democrats request a 15-minute caucus in their caucus room.
Chair recognizes Senator Farioli.
Without objection, Mr. President, I would like to return to the order of business of remonstrance.
There is no objection. We will return to the order of remonstrances. Please proceed.
Thank you. Colleagues, 2 days ago I had an opportunity to go to the University of Oregon and address the assembled membership of the 73rd class of Boys State in Oregon. It's been put on for 73 years by the Veterans of Foreign Wars. It's just an extraordinary example of leadership training. It gives high school boys an opportunity to learn about government. They organize themselves. The entire program is essentially directed by the Boys State participants. The alumni come back each year to carry forward their traditions and their learning. They instruct the new participants in how to organize themselves, how to form their caucuses. They learn all about state government and local government and federal government through role play and through debate. An intensive study of the constitutional and procedural mechanisms that are available in all forms of government. It was just a real interesting opportunity to connect with a group of young people who are very motivated and very interested in pursuing public policy and government. They've already self-selected as individuals who will make the commitment to public service. So it's pretty gratifying to see their actions and to know that this program's been going on for so long in Oregon. And I think we would be astounded if we knew how many legislators, past and current, who either served at Boys State or Girls State. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. And a little trivia question. Two of the members of this body served together in Boys State. And a dove bar awaits the correct answer to that. Chair recognizes Senator Morissette. Are we still under remonstrances, Mr. Morissette?
Thank you, Mr. President. I see a number of people here raising their hands and smiling. I was in Boys State in 1947 in Montana. Of my eight children, six of them went to Boys State and Girls State. When I was mayor of Springfield, I used to invite the Boys State, Girls State people to the city council chamber, and when they had it at the U of O, and we went through some simulations, which I thought were wonderful. It's one of the very best programs that has been going on for the last umpteen years. So, thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further remonstrances? Okay. Senator Farioli, I believe we were addressing another issue, and we'll turn the microphone to you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Republicans also would like to caucus for 15 minutes or so off the floor.
Okay, a request for a 15-minute caucus has been entered. We will be in recess until 10:15. All right. Senate will come to order. Clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Prozonsky, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Ferger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
A quorum is present. The Senate recessed following the order of reports from special committees and will resume under the order of propositions and motions. Senator Haas, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, remonstrance.
Without objection, please proceed.
Mr. President, I just wanted to make the chamber aware of a mail piece that is going out around Oregon this week to urge and target House members on a vote. The mail piece urges against Senate Bill 596. That bill is one that passed this chamber 22-6. It would outlaw a chemical known as DECA-PBDE. And the target, these House members who are considering this, and the flyer itself is full of the kind of misinformation that we have seen from the chemical industry on this issue. And I just wanted to make you aware of it. This is an out-of-state industry trying to influence decisions we're making here in Oregon.
Thank you, Senator. Are there further remonstrances? We now resume under the order of propositions and motions, and I recognize Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that consideration of HB 2004 be taken from its place on today's calendar and placed on the Wednesday, June 17th calendar.
Senator Morissette has moved that House Bill 2004 be taken from its place on today's calendar and placed on the Wednesday, June 17th calendar. To your motion.
This bill is part of the commemoration of Jim Klonowski, and the family will be here tomorrow, so we want to wait until they're here before we hear the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? The question is on taking House Bill 2004 from today's calendar and placing it on the Wednesday, June 17th calendar. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion has carried. The clerk will read the committee report and the minority report on House Bill 2227.
Senate Committee Report. President Courtney, your Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, 2 minutes approved House Bill 2227A. Having had the same consideration, respectfully reports back, recommend due pass amendments to engrossed bill, printed B, engrossed. Senate Minority Report. President Courtney, Minority on Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, 2 minutes referred House Bill 2227A. Having had the same consideration, respectfully reports back, recommend due pass to A, engrossed bill, printed B, engrossed minority.
Senator Farioli, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, you were a bit fast on the gavel, or I was a bit slow on the button under propositions and motions.
Well, we are under propositions and motions right now.
Well, then I've been timely, have I not, Mr. President?
But we have something before us at the moment.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay. Recognize Senator Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the committee report on House Bill 2227 be adopted.
Senator Dingfelder has moved that the committee report on House Bill 2227 be adopted. To your motion.
Colleagues, I bring you House Bill 2227. The Destination Resort Program began in 1984 as an economic development tool for rural areas of Oregon. At that time, the Land Conservation and Development Commission eased the requirements for destination resorts on farm and forest lands. So long as the resorts avoided particularly sensitive areas and were designed to attract new dollars through visitor accommodations. However, in the 25 years since the Destination Resort Program began, there have been significant changes in resort development. Oregon's resort legislation has not been able to keep pace with those changes, and it has resulted in a number of problems, such as it's proven difficult for resorts to be developed in areas that do not already have strong vacation markets. Resorts have shifted from rural tourist destinations to rural subdivisions that compete with development in urban areas, and as resorts become more oriented towards residential subdivisions, the long-term demand for public services such as transportation and fire protection services increases. Many Oregonians are disappointed that our resort legislation has allowed over 26,000 acres of approved resorts with almost 10,000 subdivision lots in Central Oregon, but only 3,700 visitor accommodations. Other Oregonians are frustrated that resorts which are sited near a county border or near a city often bring significant financial impacts, but those other jurisdictions often receive little benefit from the resort. Still, other Oregonians are upset that several counties would like to have resorts developed but have seen little or no resort development because of inflexible requirements that do not take into account the particular economic circumstances of that county. In response to this growing public frustration with destination resort development, I bring you House Bill 2227, which will confirm in statute that the purpose of destination resorts is to stimulate economic development through visitor-oriented overnight accommodations. The bill will also provide much-needed flexibility for local jurisdictions, especially those for whom current siting and development criteria may not fit local or regional economies or environments. Assure that traffic and wildland fire risks are considered when particular resort proposals are reviewed by counties. And finally, allow for an update when resources are available of what is currently an inflexible, one-size-fits-all financial model for destination resorts. In short, House Bill 2227 provides needed flexibility for local jurisdictions, yet still protects Oregon's natural beauty. This bill is our opportunity to address some of the imbalances brought about by resort development in Oregon, and I urge your aye vote.
Thank you, Senator. The chair recognizes Senator Atkinson.
Thank you, Mr. President. In an effort to demonstrate that Senate Democrats can, in fact, vote no, I move the minority report be substituted for the committee report on House Bill 2227.
Senator Atkinson has moved that the minority report be substituted for the committee report on House Bill 2227. To your motion.
Mr. President, we have before us a very clear delineation of political philosophy regarding this issue. House Bill 2227A very simply states that centralized land use planning is the way to go. The minority report, on the other hand, says that we shall trust local decision makers to set policy that is best for the people that they represent. It is a very clear moment in time, a very touchstone for this Senate, to make the decision between centralized land use planning and all of the lobby and all of the power that is behind that, and everyone else. Inside of the minority report, you will see the ability to actually trust, as is named, Jefferson County. Those of us that sat through all of the measures on this particular issue will know that Jefferson County followed a very clear timeline. They did everything to the letter of the law. They participated with local communities. They participated with activists and lobby groups. And when they got to the end result, an elitist activist agency said they didn't like the result, so they changed the result. As I spoke yesterday, it was an embarrassment. And so what this bill does, this is House Bill 2227, the minority report, actually says that we as policymakers, we as the task force, we as the blue ribbon panel, we as the people who are elected to represent people, not lobbying organizations, we say as the state policy that we will trust local policymakers. If you read in the summary of the majority report, it says the passage of this bill will establish the authority for the Department of Land Conservation and Development to refine destination resort policy without legislation. And that is what should be troubling to you, regardless if you're a Democrat or a Republican, whether or not you're urban or rural here. By voting against the minority report, what you are saying is that you are going to give up the authority that the people of Oregon gave you to represent them and give it to an unelected activist agency. You are going to give away the ability for you to set policy and give it to the agency. You are saying that your local people that you represent, their opinions do not matter as much as the centralized land use planning system. Colleagues, at the heart of it, this is the most elitist bill you will vote on. That's what this bill really is. This bill says that we know better than you. It is, in fact, the lowest common denominator on this issue. Now, I've been a veteran, unfortunate veteran, of resort policy over the last 10 years? Absolutely. I actually came out of that industry a few careers ago. And we understand, those of us who actually don't live in the metro area and actually have worked in the resort business, that it is a big employer that runs its own cities for the most part, and it's a good neighbor. Not only that, it's an economic driver. Not only that, it increases property values. But what this value does, or what this bill does, is this bill eliminates all local control. Gone. Any ounce of local input from citizens, gone. We voted on that yesterday. We said that the Big Look Task Force was more important than citizen involvement. Gone. Local county commissioners who make a presentation, their input is gone. We are saying that if you vote against me right here on the minority report, you are saying that the majority report, it is the policy of the state of Oregon by your vote to give your authority as an Oregon State Senator to an agency. And that should make all of you stop and pause before a partisan vote. Essentially, what you're saying here, the worst part about this bill and the minority report is the minority report says not only is local input important, it's saying that rural input is important. Because the people who are running the agency, the activist agency, do not live where they're actually living in their decisions. They don't live in the place where their decisions affect. This is the epitome of the urban and rural divide. This is elitist in urban telling the rural that they don't know what they're doing. That should make all of you stop for a moment before a partisan vote. We had some conversations just a moment ago from my good colleague who said that the royal they, if you look at the proponents of the bill, there's a lot of lobbying organizations who lobby for government. And they, being those groups, were disappointed at the lots that were brought into the process that were available for sale. I ask you, colleagues, why would a lobby organization's disappointment in somebody's local decision be before us today? They are disappointed. That's wrong. That's elitist. They should not be setting the policy for them. Let me also talk to you about transaction costs, because in the state of Oregon, our land use system creates an enormous transaction cost. What is the cost? If I go to my good colleague from Central Oregon and I want to be her to be my CPA, there's a fee for that. But if I know that it's going to be difficult, and or I am a difficult client, is probably the case more is, she might increase the cost to handle for a planned difficulty. That's called an increase in transaction costs. Every land use decision in the state of Oregon that involves the Department of Land Conservation and Development increases transaction costs, whether or not it's a destination resort or a first-time home buyer. The transaction costs for first-time home buyers are going to be increased by the passage of the majority bill. It is said that we need flexibility in the system and all these other glorious words. Well, the fact of the matter is that this agency, when we give our authority to this agency, we are saying that they have the ultimate ability to say no. It was a bill that was brought up yesterday on the Big Look Task Force that gave that terrible elitism the ability to review wildlife maps. Let me tell you how that works in a real situation. A real situation goes like this. Someone has an idea that they'd like to do something for the property so that they go to the agency. The agency will take years to review it, increasing the transaction cost, jacking up the price of lawyers, and hanging out the cost of capital. If they ultimately get a nudge from the agency that it's okay to do something, the agency will kick it to another agency and say, well, you don't apply for the maps. What maps? Well, it depends on what mood of what agency, of what bureaucrat you get to figure out what maps, wildlife overlay maps you have. And whether or not the maps were either created by scientists or if they were created by politicians, which they were in 1982. Everybody agrees the maps are bad, but this does not. And House Bill 2227A, the majority report, will not fix the maps. It will only give this activist agency the ability to mess with people, increase transaction costs based on phony maps. If you think that flexibility is going to happen as a result of your yes vote, you're sorely mistaken or you've never had an experience with these people. It is hide the ball, kick the ball down the road, but that only costs the taxpayer money, that only costs the investor money, that only increase transaction costs, that only make it more difficult for first-time home buyers. Colleagues, this is perhaps the keystone vote that you will make to either say, yes, we believe in centralized land use planning, we believe in the urban elite telling the rural what they can and cannot do, or you are going to say by voting and joining me on the minority report that it is more important for us to change the policy, not to give our authority away, for us as the Oregon State Senate to uphold local decisions and to work with locals. It is very cut and dry. It is very black and white. This is your choice. All of us that campaigned on closing the urban-rural divide, I give you the minority report, and you have a chance to do that. All of you who said you believe in local control, I give you the minority report. Here is your vote to do that. All of you who believe that land use planning needs to get streamlined and fixed and actually work in rural Oregon as much as it works in the Pearl District, I give you the minority report. This is a key touchstone event, this minority report. I would urge a yes vote.
Further discussion on the motion to substitute the minority report. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. That was a particularly eloquent speech by my colleague, but let me add, if I may, that the minority report actually does some wonderful things. It's an assertion of the rights of the counties as was created by this legislature. It makes some stipulations of fact. And, Mr. President, with your permission, I'd like to read those facts. Whereas in January 2006, Jefferson County Advisory Group formed to discuss destination resort mapping and began their local county process. It's January 06. Whereas the public process commenced in March 2006 with numerous public meetings, which were held in Madras, Crooked River Ranch, and Camp Sherman to discuss the siting of destination resorts within the county. And whereas Jefferson County commissioners approved the map of eligible lands for destination resort siting on December 21st, 2006, and whereas on January 17th, 2007, Jefferson County's decision was appealed to the Land Use Board of Appeals, and whereas on December 19th, 2008, Governor Kulongoski submitted a letter to the Land Conservation and Development Commission requesting that the commission work toward designating the Metolius River Basin as an area of critical state concern. And whereas February 11th and 12th, public hearings were held in Deschutes County and in Jefferson County to discuss the process for designating an area of critical state concern. And whereas on March 11th, 2009, the LCDC held a public hearing in Madras. And on March 24, 2009, the LCDs approved the recommendation that the Legislative Assembly establish the area of critical concern. Colleagues, on April 1, 2009, Jefferson County voted to initiate a lawsuit against LCDC requesting a judicial review of the processes that they used for designating and are using for designating an area of statewide special concern. Colleagues, in my opinion, there's no doubt that absent the action of this legislature, the actions of LCDC in designating the statewide area of special concern would be held to be illegal. Colleagues, Jefferson County has an unemployment rate of about 19% currently. The legislature created the Destination Resort Program in order to stimulate job creation, to encourage tourism, to promote recreation, basically to create economic growth and stability across local and rural regions of the state. And this mechanism has been used successfully by several counties to create a stable property base, tax base, and employment base. All of these things are what Jefferson County hoped to foster and create and encourage by the destination resort siting and mapping process that they have followed legally, lawfully, over the past 3 years plus. And to watch that process overturned, to watch Jefferson County's hopes and dreams dashed by actions of this legislature is deeply disappointing to me. And now to watch the follow-on, which is occurring, which is the further centralization of land use planning in Oregon and the denial of the lawful authority to site destination resorts to counties across Oregon, is equally disturbing. The majority bill, House Bill 2227, essentially vests the land use planning authority for destination resorts in the LCDC. And colleagues, we have clear evidence that LCDC is not an honest broker of land use process. In a 77-day program that's deeply flawed, they overturned a 3-year process that followed the law and has survived challenges. The proponents of this bill are listed as being the Central Oregon Land Watch, the Oregon Environmental Council, and the Oregon Association of Counties. When I saw the Oregon Association of Counties' support for this bill, I made an inquiry of the county commissioners throughout rural Oregon, particularly in the areas that would be affected by House Bill 2227. I sent a letter requesting information from them about their feelings about the further centralization of land use policy in Oregon. 28 county commissioners from throughout the state of Oregon replied, and in those replies, 25 oppose the centralization of land use authority and the deauthorization of land use authority at the county level by this bill. So, Mr. President, I just have to say that if ever there was an instance where you could point to the legislature creating an anti-democratic process that disempowers local control and usurps the lawful authority of locally elected officials, this is another in a sad chapter that does those things. I will join my colleague, Senator Atkinson, in advocating for the minority report and hope that you will see this bill for what it is, another attempt to tie the hands of the lawful authority that we created with our actions to authorize land use planning for destination resorts that's existed on the books in the state of Oregon since the middle 80s. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion on the motion? If there's no further discussion, Senator Atkinson, would you love to close on your motion?
Yes, Mr. President, but if you'd like to take the call, that's fine. If
we'll do the call first. Okay, Senator Devlin has demanded a call of the Senate. He is joined by Senator Rosenbaum and Senator Mona Sanderson. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. The Sergeant at Arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Buonamici. Boquist. Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Monzinerson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Ferger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney, all present.
All those subject to the call are present. Senator Atkinson, to your close.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Mr. President, as I said a few moments ago, this is a touchstone vote, and you can tell by how much chatter is in the chamber that the decision has already been made, and the die largely has been cast. Mr. President, even as most of my colleagues aren't listening, I will tell you this, that a few careers ago, I used to be in the ski business, and I was in the resort community business, and I used to manage half of a division of Mount Bachelor. And we, at that time, used to plan our marketing dollars, our staffing levels, even the food order purchases around the city of Portland's spring break schedule. And we would compete with Vail, Colorado, and we would compete with the spring break in Chicago, Illinois, in New York City, because that's the business. It's what we used to do. What you're doing by this particular vote is you are saying in the majority vote, a vote that it is in fact the city of Portland and all those who are in the metro area, the rest of Oregon is nothing but their playground. You're saying that Central Oregon is a playground, that Southern Oregon is a playground. It's not a place you actually live. God forbid we would actually trust the people there. That's what you're saying by voting against this minority report. You can tell, Mr. President, by all of those on the Senate floor who are not listening and tuned out and just think this is just another vote, we all know that the politics of this are slimy. We know that the politics of this issue are slimy. We know that this plays to the very worst stereotypes that divide the Republicans and the Democrats, the urban and the rural. We know that the politics of this are so set in stone that we can make a decision here today that is bad. We will overturn the decisions that were made in 1984 when the 1984 State Senate decided that, yes, in fact, we will not give our authority to the agency. We are, in fact, the policymakers. We are the lawmakers. Nobody has elected a very partisan activist Department of Land Use, Conservation, and Development. Nobody elected them, but the majority party here is about to give them the authority of the Oregon State Senate. We know that. We know the politics are slimy. Here's the stereotype that is so sad that has been able to come to the Oregon State Senate time and time again this legislative session. And the stereotype is this. If you don't fit into our view of environmentalism, your thoughts of conservation are not worthy. We knew that on the Metolius bill. We know that on this bill. That if you're not 100% on the environmental special interest talking points, your opinions of conservation don't matter. That's the bad stereotype that we're saying. We're saying that Democrats love all the trees and Republicans want to pave all of Oregon. That is a stereotype that you are playing to on this vote. It's wrong, it's slimy, and everyone here, all 30 lawmakers, know it. I would urge you, as statesmen and stateswomen, before the Oregon State Senate, I implore you not to give your authority away to an agency. I implore you not to play to the lowest common denominator. I implore you not to play to that very corrupt stereotype. I implore you to allow us to trust rural Oregon. I implore you to close the urban and rural divide. And I would ask for a yes vote.
The question now arises on the substitution of the minority report for the committee report. All those in favor answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Devlin. Dingfelder. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Hass. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Metzger.
No.
Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Carter, President Courtney, Bodino, Bates, Bonamici, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Haas, Johnson, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Berger, Walker, President Courtney, 12 ayes.
The motion has failed. In accordance with SR 8.60 sub 2, the Senate will take action immediately on the third reading of House Bill 2227 as amended by the committee report. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2227 on destination resorts.
Chair recognizes Senator Dingfelder.
Colleagues, you've already heard my opening statement. I just want to emphasize once again that this program is about flexibility and doing what's right at the local level and for counties. I do have some responses to some of the points we've heard, but I'd like to save that for my close and see if there's any other discussion on this bill, Mr. President.
Thank you. Chair recognizes Senator Nelson.
Thank you. In the original comment, they were talking about 26,000 acres in the state of Oregon that were being used. Well, the state of Oregon has 60 million acres in the entire state, so 26,000 sounds like a lot of acres, but in the really big picture, it's not. This is not a good bill. I'll be opposing it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Further discussion? No further discussion. Senator Dingfelder?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to respond to some of the comments that we heard and also reemphasize some of the points from my opening statement. First, I want to discuss the context of this bill. And one of the things that House Bill 2227 does is it does provide an easier means to site resorts. Counties always have the option to consider a resort on former forest land as an exception to the statewide land use planning goals for agriculture or forestry, such as abandoned dunes. House Bill 2227 does not affect this county option in any way. So regarding local flexibility and local planning processes, this bill does not affect that current statutes. As far as local control, the current destination resort statutes lock in a one-size-fits-all template that forces counties and property owners to plan and develop large projects that include large subdivisions in order to pay for the high upfront costs. Just a reminder of what these include. Minimum acreage, 160 acres or a quarter of a mile, a minimum number of overnight units of 150, a minimum amount on recreational facilities, $10 million, a maximum ratio of overnight units to homes, 2.5 to 1 in central and eastern Oregon. What this bill does, colleagues, this removes these statewide regulations, these one-size-fits-all rules. It allows counties the flexibility to tailor destination resorts to their own circumstances. Once again, local flexibility. Legislators who truly favor local autonomy over land use should support this bill. This bill will also help reduce public costs and preserve the existing industry. It adds two criteria that counties must consider when mapping what areas are eligible for destination resorts. Lands within an irrigation district, if the district formally elects to be excluded. And this was an amendment that we added in the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee to allow more flexibility. Lands with a high risk of wildland fire, unless the county develops a plan to reduce fire risk. And colleagues, I sit on the subcommittee on Ways and Means and Natural Resources, and right now we are grappling with how to pay for fire reduction costs in the state that cost us millions and millions of dollars. So this is something proactive we can do to help reduce those costs. These criteria are common sense factors that help assure that commercial farming is protected from conflicts and significant public costs of protecting new communities from wildfires are reduced. This bill also assures that resorts are truly resorts and not rural subdivisions. Remember that the original idea behind destination resorts was that they would bring new visitors and their dollars into rural economies. House Bill 2227 would put the resort back into destination resorts by having each county review proposed resorts to assure that their primary use is for overnight accommodations. The original concept of destination resorts continues to be a good one. As you've heard today, I think that we all agree that many resorts have brought much needed jobs and tax dollars to our rural counties. If we are going to spread this tool to other areas of the state, we need to give counties the flexibility to tailor resort requirements to their local conditions. House Bill 2227 affords us that flexibility. It is prospective. It will not affect existing county mapping or existing resort proposals. And I urge your aye vote and respectfully call of the Senate.
Senator Jackie Ningfellow has demanded a call of the Senate. She's joined by Senator Richard Devlin and Senator Diane Rosenbaum. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. The Sergeant of Arms will attend. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Juanes Anderson. Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Morse, Nelson, Brzozinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
He's there.
All present.
All those subject to the call are now present. The question now arises upon a third reading of the final passage of House Bill 2227. Those who are the pen the bill shall pass, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Dingfelder. Ferrioli. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Juanes Anderson. Juanes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzozinski. Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no, Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Cruz, Metzger, Morse, Nelson, Starr, Telfer, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, 16 ayes.
House Bill 2227, have received a constitutional majority, declared passed. Senator Vicki Walker, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Vote explanation.
Please file your vote explanation.
I'm not quite sure what we're trying to do to rural Oregon, but I'm really concerned about that. Destination resorts have been an economic development tool for rural Oregon, and if rural Oregon doesn't want them, they vote not to have them, like Crook County has done. Through a local ballot measure, they said they'd had enough. So I'm just really troubled. I am troubled by all of these bills that we've seen on this issue. And for those of you who are interested, your 22-28 just passed 31 votes in the House.
Recognize Senator Jason Atkinson.
Vote explanation.
Please file your vote explanation.
Mr. President, I voted no on that particular measure. This measure that just passed gave the ultimate authority to the Land Conservation Development. It just gave away the authority of the Oregon State Senate to them, and they now have the ultimate authority to make up the rules, to change the game, to say no. The two criteria that were added to them amendment to that last bill are exclusively designed to increase two things. One, the time it takes, which increases the transaction costs, which discourages people from making investments. And number two, the ability for the agency to say no. Colleagues, we have just given the ultimate authority of the Land Conservation and Development the ability to make law, to say no, and to absolutely shut down any ability for the Oregon State Senate to have an influence and to protect and represent their local communities. You just voted to give it all away.
Senator Ted Ferrioli.
Under the order of propositions and motions, Mr. President,
I believe we're on
I move that SJR 24 be withdrawn from committee on environment and natural resources.
Senator Ted Fraley has moved that the SJR 24 be withdrawn from the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. Explain your motion, please.
Mr. President, I believe that the body would be well served by having a consideration of SJR 24, that it is incredibly important and germane to the daily living of many people throughout rural Oregon, and I would urge that we do bring that order business forth, and that SJR 24 be withdrawn from the committee and brought immediately to the floor for debate, Mr. President.
Okay, recognize Senator Brian Boquist under discussion on the motion to withdraw.
To the motion, Mr. President.
To the motion.
Colleagues, we're in the waning hours. We can already see sine die out there. The pools are already up and going. This motion, the intent of it is to bring it obviously here to the floor so that we can empower the emergency board in our absence to act on our behalf for the goodness of the citizens of rural Oregon. Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion to withdraw.
Call the Senate.
Okay. I was going to let him close, but you want to do it now?
Senator
Fraley, if there's no further discussion, do you wish to close on your motion?
Mr. President, I will respect the motion made by...
All right. So that's what you want to do. All right. Senator Devlin has demanded a call to the Senate. He is to join by Senator Dianne Rosenbaum as well as Senator Lori Montes Anderson. The doorkeepers will bar the doors and Sergeant Rogers will attend. The clerk, please call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Morse.
Senator Morse.
Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Ferger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney.
We're looking for Senator Frank Morse. Yeah, I believe he's coming. They're saying. Where is he? Oh, there he is. All right. All those subject to the call are now present, and we'll now have Senator Ferrioli, who will give us his closing on the motion to withdraw.
Thank you, Mr. President. In closing, I would just point out that Senate Joint Resolution 24 involves the Western Oregon Plan Revision, and as we all know, colleagues, the Western Oregon Plan Revision is a plan by the Bureau of Land Management that includes more than 689,000 acres of protected lands. It essentially relates to those BLM lands that were primarily Oregon and California Reinvestment Act lands, commonly referred to as the ONC lands. Colleagues, these lands are located in 18 Western Oregon counties. They are forest lands that are managed for the benefit of the counties for general fund purposes, including law enforcement, emergency services, health, senior programs, libraries, and many other public services that are needed and expected by Oregon residents. Colleagues, many of you made a trip in the interim to visit the Western Oregon counties that are directly affected by the crashing timber receipts and falling revenue. We met with county sheriffs, those that made the journey, who were having to lay off their county staff, and witnessed a corresponding decline in public safety. We met with county governments who were having to lay off people, close libraries, curtail hours of operation, do far less road maintenance than was required to maintain stability in those rural counties. We met with ordinary citizens who were experiencing job loss and the corresponding collapse of local infrastructure and community business enterprises. And, Mr. President, all of those negative effects were coming because of the suppression of outputs from the ONC lands. Colleagues, the Bureau of Land Management undertook a process to determine what would be sustainable and reasonable in terms of managing the ONC lands for the purposes for which they were intended, which is to produce revenue for the counties. In this plan revision, this update, which is required by federal law, the approximately 1.1 million acres of BLM managed land that are located in Western Oregon would be managed for a sustainable yield of timber that would be sufficient to sustain local government, produce revenue for roads and schools, and also be dollars that would go into the general fund of the local jurisdictions. SJR 24 is meant essentially to engage the legislature in the discussion of the management of these lands. It's essentially meant to require the Legislative Council Committee to direct our Legislative Council and to retain any other member of the bar that is necessary to move forward in asserting Oregon's position of support for the Western Oregon Plan revision. Mr. President, doing that would help us create jobs, sustain resources, put thousands of rural Oregonians back to work in family wage jobs. And to counter this, Mr. President, many of you saw the headlines in the Oregonian this morning about the issue of federal logging restrictions and the threats that that set of restrictions causes to rural life in Grant County, Oregon, in John Day particularly, where I come from. The article was entitled Last Mill Standing, and it discusses the plight of timber workers who are caught in a situation where the lack of federal will to engage in sustainable management on federal lands is destroying economies. Mr. President, this legislature needs to stand up for rural communities. This legislature needs to solve the problem of collapsing economies in rural counties, or it will have to deal with this problem when the safety net money currently authorized by Congress runs out, as it inevitably will do. Mr. President, I call for an aye vote on my motion to remove SJR 24 from committee and bring it to the floor.
Those are the opinion that SJR 24 should be withdrawn from the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources will answer aye as the names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will please call the roll.
Ferrioli.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
Gerard.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Johnson. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Cruz. Metzger. Montes-Anderson. Montes-Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. President Courtney. Voting no, Bates, Bonamici, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Haas, Johnson, Metzger, Montes-Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Berger, Walker, President Courtney. 12 ayes.
Everybody okay? The motion has failed. Action on executive appointment requiring Senate confirmation. Introduction of first reading of the Senate measures. Second reading of Senate measures.
Senate Bill 5501, Financial Administration and Organic Commission's Office, Property Money and Current Emergency. Senate Bill 5512, Financial Administration and Columbia River Gorge Commission, Property Money and Current Emergency. Senate Bill 5531, Financial Administration and Department of Land Conservation and Development, Property Money and Current Emergency. Senate Bill 5533, Financial Administration and Land Use Board of Appeals, Property Money and Current Emergency. Senate Bill 5540, Related to Financial Administration and Department of Revenue, Property Money and Current Emergency. Senate Bill 79, Related to Energy Use of Buildings, Current Emergency. Senate Bill 91, Related to Applied Petroleum Glass. House Bill 158, Senate Bill 158, when Healthcare and Property Money, Senate Bill 161, the Hospice Programs, Declare Emergency, Senate Bill 529, Land Department of Human Services, Declare Emergency, Senate Bill 546, Motorcycles, Senate Bill 700, Land of Reintegration Veterans, Declare Emergency, Senate Bill 772, Landlord Tenant Law, Declare Emergency, Senate Bill 778, Land of Compensation Public Officials, Declare Emergency.
These are past the counter. Third reading of the Senate measures. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 5532, Pension Administration, Department of Land Conservation and Development, Declare Emergency.
Recognize Senator Vicki Walker.
Trying to do this bill. Mr. President, thank you. Colleagues, this is a fee bill for your favorite agency, Department of Land Conservation and Development. This bill ratifies two fee increases implemented by administrative rule by the Department of Land Conservation and Development during the 2007 interim. I know I have a sense of humor. It's great. Absent this bill, state law requires that fee increases adopted administratively would be rescinded on July 1, 2009, or upon the hallowed sine die. The agency increased the annual subscription fee for mailed notice of proposed action from $50 to $300. This service has, on average, 6 subscribers. And those of you who are interested, one of those subscribers is Paul Dewey, the lawyer for Central Oregon Land Watch, who will now be paying not $50, but $300. It also increased the annual subscription fee for mailed notice of adoption from $150 to $500. There are currently no subscribers for this service. These fees have not been increased since 1982. That's a long time. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means noted that it might be better to have a mechanism to increase a fee incrementally over time rather than wait several years and then see a large percentage increase in a fee. Since the subscriber numbers for these services are so low, the committee questioned whether the services and fees are really needed and asked the agency to review this issue in the interim, and I couldn't agree more. I might add that it would be helpful for this agency to pay attention to its own internal affairs. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5532.
Thank you. I recognize Senator Jason Atkinson.
Mr. President, the fact that this bill is now up before us after the votes we just had drips with irony. I am made known that it is very difficult to accurately quote Shakespeare. However, it is in the mold of Henry V, where Henry V takes leadership and has to make the decision. Does he say consistent with himself and punish his best friend, or does he make an exception for his best friend and let his best friend live, even though he has denied an order? It is in that type of irony that I rise against Senate Bill, the budget bill for the Land Conservation and Development, the single agency that has taken the authority of the Oregon State Senate onto their own and has the ability now to make decisions carte blanche about the future of Oregon. It is in that irony that I would respectfully urge, in no reflection upon the ways and means process at all, just as the simple thought that we are the policy-making decision about to give the checkbook to this agency, I would urge a no vote.
Further discussion? Senator Walker, do you wish to close?
Only, Mr. President, to let the senior senator from Southern Oregon know this is the fee bill for the department. The budget bill you will be able to go off on tomorrow. Thank you.
Senator Richard Devlin is demanding to call the Senate. He's joined by Senator Diane Rosenbaum and Senator Vicki Walker. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. Sergeant Rogers will tell the clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Juanes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here.
All present.
Of House Bill 5532. Those with the opinion bill should pass, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Juanes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum. Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick.
And a verdict.
Carter, Devlin, Dingfeather, Ferrioli, President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no, Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Cruz, Morse, Nelson, Starr, Telfer, Whitsett, Winters, 18 ayes.
Senate Bill 5532, having received the constitutional majority, declared passed. Clerk reads bill.
Senate Bill 630, disproportionality of child welfare cases and declared emergency.
Recognize Senator Margaret Carter. 630, Senate Bill 630.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, to begin, Senate Bill 630 costs no general funds, no lottery funds. It gives legislative direction to the creation of a task force to examine disproportionality in the child welfare foster care system. Funding for the task force is coming from a $168,882 other funds grant from the KC Family Programs. Presently, we have a disproportionality of minority children in the system. For example, Native American children make up 1.3% of Oregon's population, but 10% in Oregon's foster care population. African American children make up 2.3% of Oregon's child population, and 7.3% of Oregon's foster care population. Senate Bill 630 establishes a framework for the task force to proceed along the lines to undertake a statewide integrated approach in examining how we can reduce disparate outcomes for children and families of color and Native American children who are involved with the child welfare system. This is needed work. The report on this bill is due October the 1st, 2010, and it sunsets at the start of the 11-13 session. Senate Bill 630 gives legislative sanction and support to the task. I urge your aye vote today on this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Laurie Montes Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to thank the good senator from Portland who has brought this bill forward. She's been such a strong advocate for minorities, and we truly need to address this, and this should provide a wonderful framework for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Come here, Robin.
Senator Carter, you wish to close? Okay. Question number upon third reading and final passage of House Bill, Senate Bill 630. Those opinion bills passed out. This votes no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Gerard. Haas. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Juanes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfeather, Ferrioli, George, President Courtney.
Yes.
30 ayes.
Senate Bill 630, I have received a constant majority to declare it passed. House first reading of the House measures. Second reading of House measures.
House Bill 2345 relating to impaired health professionals declaring emergency. House Bill 2403 and forfeiture. House Bill 2518 related to government ethics declaring emergency. House Bill 3473 related to student voters declaring emergency.
This is passed the calendar. Third reading of House measure. Clerk reads bill.
House Bill 2370 the motor vehicle insurance policies.
Recognize Senator Vicki Walker.
Thank you, Mr. President. House Bill 2370 is a companion bill to Senate Bill 546 that you'll see later in the week. This bill requires insurers offering liability, personal injury protection, or collision coverage to offer a discount to motorcycle operators who have completed the motorcycle rider education course established under ORS 802.320, and it specifies that only one motorcycle per operator is eligible for the discount, and the motorcycle must not be used for business. We had to do an amendment over here because inadvertently the bill as written would have allowed anyone who took a motorcycle safety course to get a discount on even their auto policies, even though they didn't own a motorcycle. So this is specific to motorcycles because insurance companies recognize that those who receive rider training are much safer riders. In fact, ODOT will tell you that about 80% of the 2007 fatalities on motorcycles had not taken the rider training. So this is good for insurance companies, and it's certainly good for those who ride motorcycles, such as myself. So I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Question on rise final 30 and the final passage of House Bill 2370. The opinion bill is passed. The other bill is called.
Pass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montezinerson. Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Ferger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin,
aye.
Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Cruz, Morse, Starr, Telfer, Whitsett, Winters, 20 ayes.
House Bill 2370, I receive the constant majority declared passed. Clerk reads bill.
House Bill 2713, Public Safety Officers.
Recognize Senator Roy Brzezinski.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, 2713B came out of your Judiciary Committee on a 3-2 vote. This is a bill that would allow for employees that are public safety officers to have certain procedural rights, due process, if they are accused of some type of misdoing or allegations of violation of their policies. This basically just sets up the ability for those officers to have certain information provided to them, making certain that they understand what the ramifications are if they fail to compile or comply with a requirement to give testimony. And so it's basically a due process notice and protection for these officers. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Discussion. Question on rise upon 30 and the final patch, House Bill 2713. Those opinion bills pass. Say aye. Those no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Johnson.
Wait a minute. Strike, strike, stop, stop, stop. Senator Ferrioli, for what purpose do you raise? Arise.
To announce a possible conflict of interest, Mr. President.
Okay. Would you please note your possible conflict of interest?
Yes, Mr. President. As many of our colleagues know, my son is a sworn officer for Benton County, and I believe that he will be covered under the stipulations in this bill.
Thank you. Your potential conflict is now on the record. Question on rise upon third reading, the final passage of House Bill 2713. Those opinion bills pass. Say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montezinerson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Ferger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, George, Gerard, Hass, President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no, Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Cruz, Schrader, Telfer, Whitsett, Winters, 21 ayes.
The House Bill 2713, having received the constant majority, is declared passed. Clerk reads the bill. Recognize Senator Metzke, for what purpose do you rise?
Next bill.
Okay. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2895, and state measures to declare emergency.
Recognize Senator Rick Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. President. In 2008, a nonpartisan initiative reform organization organized and conducted the first citizen initiative review project in Oregon. The pilot project brought together 24 citizens from across the state to engage in a five-day in-depth evaluation and debate about ballot measure 58, culminating in the production of an impartial fact-based statement about the ballot measure, a statement produced by average voters to be informative to the average voter. The CIR process involves the random selection of 18 to 23 registered voters chosen using a stratified random sampling procedure to ensure a demographically balanced panel of voters from across the state. Over a period of 5 days, panelists received testimony from initiative proponents, opponents, and background witnesses, and with the assistance of a trained moderator, they debate whether they support or oppose the initiative, along with their specific reasons for their position, and the panel's conclusions are then codified in a citizen statement to be included in the voter's pamphlet. House Bill 2895A creates a Citizens Initiative Review pilot project to be applied to 1 to 3 measures on the 2010 ballot alone, and the statements would be printed on a new designated page in the voter's pamphlet. The pilot program would be funded with grants and thus has no fiscal impact. House Bill 2895A establishes an impartial and transparent process for publicly evaluating ballot measures, restore accountability and confidence to Oregon's initiative system, and I urge an aye vote.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I rise in opposition to this measure. We had extensive testimony during the debate on this issue in the Rules Committee, and it was very clear after a brief discussion with folks that were the proponents that they already had all the tools and rights necessary for them to convene any kind of organizational group that they wanted to convene. To debate the issue in any way that they wish to debate, to conclude as they might, one way or the other, up or down, or to add or detract any information that they wish to, and to publish their recommendations and their findings in the voter's pamphlet. There's absolutely nothing that prevents people from engaging in full communication, full contact democracy. There's every mechanism that's already available. People can get online to gather information. They can form a work group. They do or don't have to have any kind of a facilitator. And at the end of the day, many groups in Oregon do this. The League of Women Voters often takes positions on the measures of the day. A myriad of environmental organizations and public interest groups do it. Special interest groups do it. Ordinary citizens do it that are motivated to have their say. And what they will find in the Secretary of State's office is a welcoming process for people who wish to express their opinions, and we actually encourage them to do that. And the way that we encourage them to do that is by keeping the costs in the voter's pamphlet low. So, Mr. President, I really questioned at the time the need for us to have some kind of an official seal of approval attached to those informal work groups by the state of Oregon or by the Secretary of State. And the question of who it is that would impanel the moderator and who would do the training and just exactly how that mechanism would take place at least leads me to believe that some of that it opens the process to influence of various kinds. And I simply believe that of all the unnecessary bills that this legislature has considered and of all the unnecessary bills that this legislature have passed, this is perhaps the prime example of a bill that is unnecessarily complicating a process that's already open and available at no cost for the process to ordinary citizens who can organize themselves in any manner or fashion that they wish without constraints, administrative rules, or the overheads that come with those things, and publish their findings for all to read in the Oregon Voter's Guide. Mr. President, again, unnecessary. It has the danger of taking a citizens group which might have an axe to grind and putting the state of Oregon seal of approval on it as some sort of an official proceeding, which it really is not. So, Mr. President, this is a bad bill, an unnecessary bill, and a bill that duplicates a process that's already available to Oregonians. So I urge a no vote on this bill. Thank you, Mr. President.
I recognize Senator Fred Gerard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll be brief. Colleagues, this body, the Senate, has really gone after the initiative process this session, and this is another bill to do so. And I find it really alarming that we think that this is going to be objective. Who is the one that directs and to designate what organizations go in the voter's pamphlet? It's the Secretary of State. Now, I'm sorry, but when the Secretary of State runs, is there a D or an R after their name? There absolutely is. So this is a political way to increase the influence of the person in power, and I think that that is terribly wrong. The initiative process is supposed to be non-biased, and I think it should stay that way, and we should have a no vote.
Recognize Senator Jeff Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, we've been debating various aspects of the initiative process my entire time in the Legislative Assembly. The point I made early on in the entire process was what we should be doing is not restricting access or denying access, but trying to come up with ways to give people more and better information as to the decisions they're making. But it seems to me, Mr. President, that over the years, all of the attempts we have made to modify the initiative process or the reporting of the results of the initiative process have been designed more towards restricting access and making it harder. To the point now, Mr. President, where it costs a heck of a lot of money to get something on a ballot, and the time frame has shrunk to the point where there's really no other way to do it. I think, Mr. President, with a bill like this, what we are telling the people of Oregon, or the message they will be getting, is we not only are going to make it harder for citizens to bring issues before the citizenry of the state of Oregon, but we are also going to design a system by which we are going to give special credence to specific groups as far as their opinion on this ballot measure or that ballot measure. My good friend from John Day was absolutely right. Anybody can put their opinion on a ballot measure in the voter's pamphlet. It costs very little money to do that. Colleagues, we need to be very careful. The initiative process is something that the people of Oregon hold as a sacred trust and a right. We continue to tinker with that sacred trust and that right. I still continue to chafe, Mr. President, at the fact that when we should be trying to increase the trust of the people in the actions of the Legislative Assembly, we continue to do things like this bill to try to game the system in the favor of one party or the other. This is a bad move. Let's leave this process to the citizens of Oregon. They've handled it very well up till now. There's no reason for us to meddle with it.
Recognize Senator Bruce Starr.
Thank you, Mr. President. Question to Carrier. Mr.
Carrier, yield.
Yes.
Carrier, will you?
Thank you. I hadn't anticipated speaking or even asking questions, but as a courtesy to the minority leader, he asked that I inquire particularly about the makeup of this committee and its the process by which they will ensure that representatives of all of the state of Oregon will be on this particular committee. as I look at it, it looks to me that there's a possibility, quite honestly, that it would be heavily tilted toward voters that are on the west side of the Cascade Mountain Range. Can you answer the question about how specifically the individuals will be selected to serve on this? And in so doing that, would ensure that there's broad representation of all four corners of the state?
Thank you for the question, Senator. This panel will be between 18 and 24 citizens, first of all. And it is a desire to have this panel that is representative of the state to the extent practicable with that number of folks. And so if you'll look at the bill, starting with lines 23 and 24 on the opening page of the bill, after this random selection from the voters' pool is taken, they will consider the location of the elector's residence, their affiliation, their voting history, age. And as I think a lot of us know, in putting together a sample, say for a survey, you look at the demographic of the state, the average age of the state, the sex of the individual, the voting history, and their geographic location to try to get a random sample. And so, Senator, I believe what the RAJ is to do is by looking at this, it's to the extent possible within the limitations of a maximum of 24 individuals, be able to represent those areas, and that's the purpose of having those specific qualifiers.
Further question, Mr. President?
The Kerry will yield.
Yes.
The Kerry will yield.
Thank you. The senator from Welchers and I have worked in legislation a lot over our time here in the Senate. And when we have, in legislation that we've put together, identified individuals from various regions of the state, was that contemplated as it relates to this bill, that you would have specifically in the bill that you would lay out the fact that you want to have folks identified from, say, the five congressional districts? So you basically would ensure that you have geographical representation on this committee. Was that ever contemplated as this bill was moving through the committee process? It seems to me that that would have been a way to just make it crystal clear that, that all four corners of the state was represented. Was that contemplated? If it was and it was decided not to put in this bill, was there a rationale for that?
Thank you, Senator, for the question. I do believe the testimony reflected that it is a desire to be representative of the state. I do not recall any specific testimony of trying to put into the bill, say, congressional districts to help ensure that. I think the language was intended to be broad, such as line 20 and page 1, that the demographic makeup of the panel fairly reflects the population of the electorate of the state as a whole with the following qualifications. Now, certainly, I think within that definition, one can decide is the electorate based on a certain age, a certain party, might reflect a different part of the state more than just geography. But I do know it is the intent of the legislation to be as representative as possible. I will not characterize that there was any specific discussion of, you know, how to fine-tune that more specifically to ensure that. I do believe that is the intent. And I think one of the values of this being a pilot project for just one election, you know, we will see whether, in fact, that met the expectations of the piece of legislation.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Larry George.
Thank you, Mr. President. The voter pamphlet in the state of Oregon is a sacred piece that people really depend on when it comes to how they make up their decisions. And they recognize that there are statements in favor and statements in opposition. And they trust that they'll understand each side when they take a look at the pros and the cons. And they're clearly identified as the pros and the cons. There is a nonpartisan explanation that is developed through a process that we already have, which is the explanation statement, which is the two chief petitioners and then two well-known opponents of the measure who then come together to pick a third party, and then they together do a legal review of what the impact of the measure is. We already have five individuals sitting in a room who are trained, who know the issue in and out, who come up with an objective analysis of what the measure does, where we know that all the sides that are concerned about the issue are fully represented within that process. What happens is that I don't hear a lot of people complaining about this objective, bipartisan, multipartisan review process that we currently have that then is printed in the voter pamphlet statement right next to the ballot title. So you have the ballot title, then you have this objective review created by all sides of the discussion. And it is reviewed for its legal accuracy. The problem with this is not that this isn't a good idea, that citizens shouldn't get together. It's the fact that it's the government ordaining a process to politically review speech. I would strongly encourage the nonprofit groups that are discussed in this bill, because if you'll notice on page 1, line 12, it says the state shall designate one or more organizations to work cooperatively. We're going to go out to nonprofit organizations and ask them to put this process together. But then what's happening is that the state of Oregon is putting a stamp of approval on this ballot process that is going to make a political analysis of the measure. And that's a dramatically different step than what we've done in the past to try to keep the initiative process and specifically the voter's pamphlet as objective as possible. The idea is that we have a voter's pamphlet statement that has the ballot title that was created through a process through the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, and then the State Supreme Court, where you have multiple chances to debate the objectivity of that ballot statement. Then you have the fiscal analysis, which is another process which we have built in to make sure that it has objectivity. Then we have the explanation sheet, the voter explanation, which has come together again by the proponents and the opponents coming together with an objective review. And to think that we are going to go out and go to a nonprofit organization for them to bring citizens together, for them to hear all sides, come up with a political assessment of what the ballot measure means, and then we're going to print that in the voter's pamphlet as some kind of objective statement is wrongheaded. The fact is that right now today, for $500, any one of these nonprofit groups could do exactly that. These nonprofit organizations can come together, can come up with a nonpartisan way to review it, come up with a statement that they believe reflects the merits of that proposal, and then for $500, put it in the for or against side. And if they think they've come up with a really objective view, there's nothing in state law that doesn't prohibit them from spending $1,000 to put one in the for and the one in the against. I don't want to criticize a process where more citizens get involved, but I will tell you that the voter pamphlet process, the voter pamphlet, the way we have it, is developed to try to give the voters the most objective material possible. And to think that we're going to inject some process like this that is political and then give it the stamp of approval by the Oregon State Legislature and the Oregon State government is just wrongheaded. Regardless of what side, I will promise you that no matter which side of the political spectrum you sit, you will get stung by this process if it was to become state law. Eventually, political statements authorized and endorsed by the state of Oregon will make statements that are political in nature and that are wrong on both sides. And I urge a no vote. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Vicki Walker.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's been a while since my good friend, the senator from southwestern Oregon, spoke, but I was kind of confused. I had to reread the bill because I wasn't quite following the argument. Yesterday, 2005, was clearly a bill that would limit the right of Oregonians to file ballot measures. But 2895 simply gives them information. It provides valuable information. Some people don't simply have the time to review all of the materials that come out about ballot measures, and I think this is a thoughtful approach. They tried it in the last election as a pilot program without sanction from the Secretary of State, and I think it went well. I think that the good senator from Mount Hood has answered the question about the diversity of the panel. So this is really just information, and I think the more information, the better. So I'll be supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Frank Morris.
Thank you, Mr. President. I find this discussion rather curious. Democracy is based on citizen engagement, and an engaged citizen must be an informed citizen. What this bill is, very clearly, it is a pilot project. It sunsets in January of 2011. It is not a permanent fixture in our landscape. People that participate in this are selected from as anonymous electors. So to steer an outcome in this process, I don't see in this language. Further, for this to be the stamp of approval from the state of Oregon clearly is not allowed by virtue of a requirement that in the voter's pamphlet, the explanation will have this caveat. The opinions expressed in this statement are those of the members of a citizen panel and were developed through the citizen review process. They are not, and that's capitalized, official opinions or positions endorsed by the state of Oregon or any government agency. A citizen panel is not a judge of the constitutionality or legality of any ballot measure, and any statements about such matters are not binding in a court of law. Colleagues, this is a trial. It's an opportunity to get more people engaged in the process, to think about it, and to come to informed conclusions when they cast their ballots. If knowledge and understanding and engagement are inappropriate in the democratic process, then a no vote on this bill would be appropriate. They are totally appropriate in a democratic process. Mr. President, I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Metzger, you wish to close? He does not. Oh. Senator Devlin has demanded a call of the Senate. He's joined by Senator Dianne Rosenbaum and by Senator Lori Montes Anderson. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. Sergeant Orange will attend. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson. Atkinson. Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney.
He's here. For two members, Senator Monroe, Senator Starr. For Senator Monroe now.
There he is.
All those subject to the call are now present. Question now rises upon a third reading and final passage. House Bill 2895. All those opinion bills passed. The aye opposed, no. Clerk, close the roll.
Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no, Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Cruz, Starr, 23 ayes.
House Bill 2895, having received a constitutional majority, declared passed.
clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 3021, Bill in Emergencies.
Recognize Senator Suzanne Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. President, for your enthusiasm. Colleagues, House Bill 3021B started when Dr. Bruce Goldberg from the Department of Human Services requested that the Oregon Law Commission conduct a review of health and emergency response statutes to determine if there are liability barriers that hamper the health care provider response that's needed to protect the Oregon public in case of disaster. It was expanded to include emergency responders in general. So, colleagues, this came from the Oregon Law Commission, which, as you know, does very thorough work. They had a work group to discuss this issue, and after the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, there was a further work group to discuss the specific workers' compensation issue. The bill establishes that during a declared emergency, certain emergency service volunteers, healthcare providers, healthcare facilities, and emergency healthcare centers, and search and rescue volunteers who qualify, serve as agents of a public body under the Oregon Tort Claims Act. The bill also requires counties to provide workers' compensation coverage to qualified search and rescue volunteers who are under the direction of the county. The bill also allows the self-insured counties to use the workers' compensation assigned risk pool. So, colleagues, this is when there's a governor-declared state of emergency or a public health emergency. Healthcare providers who are serving under the direction of the public body will be considered agents and are covered by the Oregon Tort Claims Act. There's also been some discussion about whether the requirements of the bill will affect compliance with OSHA, and I want to clarify for the record that according to the Workers' Compensation Division, this bill does not change the applicability of OSHA, and counties will still need to comply with those requirements. So, colleagues, in 2008, there were 118 search and rescue missions just in Clackamas County. Police resources are simply insufficient, public resources are simply insufficient to meet the needs of rescue missions in those emergencies. Colleagues, this is an important bill that will remove barriers and provide incentives for people to assist in the important work of responding to emergencies in our state. Please join me in removing those barriers and vote aye on House Bill 3021B. Thank you, Mr. President.
President, to the bill. I voted no in the committee against this bill. There was, in fact, a work group that transpired. When it came to committee, there were two competing amendments from one half of the work group and one the other half of the group. One of them allowed them to use only workers' compensation. There was testimony about out-of-state individuals that came through. There was testimony about the level of professionalism and the amount of money an individual would have to spend to become one of these volunteers. And the key issue in this bill revolved around whether certain counties, only two or three, should use workers' compensation or should use insurance. And these are issues in which the county is already absorbing the cost for mostly search and rescue up on Mount Hood. And I felt in the committee of the county, which was paying the bill, footing the bill, doing the work, and inviting these volunteers in, and remember, these are all volunteers, they don't have to come, was providing adequate insurance coverage, which was less expensive. So therefore, when the final product came out, I voted no because it did not give the option to the county of workman's compensation or insurance. Urge a no vote.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Bruce Starr.
Thank you, Mr. President. Question to the carrier.
Would the carrier answer a question, please?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President.
She will.
Thank you. The bill contemplates workers' compensation insurance, basically workers' comp for these volunteers. And this is primarily folks that are working as rescuers on Mount Hood. Traditionally, workers' comp is based on a person's salary, base salary. It's where you compute the workers' compensation rewards or awards. So in these cases, what salary is going to be the basis for their workers' compensation coverage? The person's private sector employment, or how is that going to be figured out?
Senator, I know that the chair of the committee is trying to find the committee staff to help answer that question. I know that there was discussion about allowing them to buy coverage per hour of volunteer time. I do not know on the rate on which they will base that. I do know that it was discussed, and I'm sorry I don't have the answer on the top of my head.
Mr. President, maybe the chair would have an answer to the question.
Excuse me, what's that? You want to ask another question?
A question perhaps to the chair of the committee. who may have the answer.
Would the chair of the committee answer the question?
Thank you, Mr. President. Regarding the technicalness of the question, I've asked for our legislative staff to come down. We have Anna, who worked on the bill in the fix. My understanding, this was a negotiated agreement between the various counties and other players as to allowing for the coverage for these individuals who are providing these emergency services and still safeguarding the integrity of the system.
Mr. President, I would suggest that this is an important piece of information if we are going to move forward with this bill. I think it would be important to have an answer to this. These volunteers, as it was represented by the senator from West Valley, spend an inordinate amount of money to become qualified for these volunteers. It would seem to me that these folks would be of significant means. And if we're going to cover workers' compensation based on, say, a doctor's salary or a lawyer's salary or a chief engineer's salary, perhaps, then that would be an issue that we ought to have an answer for before we vote up or down on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Senator Bonamici, do you wish to close?
I was going to try to answer the question, Mr. President. There is some language on page 5 of the B engrossed bill that says that an insurer or self-insured employer may fix assumed wage rates for qualified search and rescue volunteers, which may be used only for purposes of computation under the workers' compensation statute. So any further information?
I believe in on committee they talked about what that would be.
They did discuss in committee what those rates would be, and there is a discussion in the bill on page 5, lines 4 through 10, that discusses that particular issue, that if the rates are found to be unreasonable, the director may fix appropriate rates, so it will be overseen by the Workers' Comp Division. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. The question now arises upon the third reading and the final passage of the House Bill 3021. Those opinion bills are passed, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfeather, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Hass, Johnson, Cruz, President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no, Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Cruz, Morse, Nelson, Starr, Telfer, Whitsett, Winters, 18 ayes.
House Bill 3021, having received constant majority, is declared passed without objection. I will, the remaining House measures will be carried over until tomorrow's calendar. Other business of the Senate, of course, is recognized. Senator Ted Ferrioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, a vote explanation.
Please file your vote explanation.
Mr. President, I normally vote to support volunteers in every capacity since rural, particularly eastern Oregon, depends so heavily on volunteers. But in the instance of the vote we just took, the bill would have an indeterminate fiscal impact on the Oregon Military Department, the Oregon Judicial Department, the Department of Administrative Services, an indeterminate fiscal on the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the Department of Human Services, and counties. Given those variables, those multiple unknown variables, Mr. President, I did not think it was in the best interest of the state, of the citizens of the state, to have an aye vote cast on this measure. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. All that is in the Senate, according to the SR 8.403 committee referral list number 133, which distributed to members June 15th, referrals recorded in the Journal and State Report and so ordered. Is it further announced? It's recognized. Senator Richard Devlin, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, Senate colleagues. Senate Democrats, get your lunch and be in the caucus room at 12:20.
Recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli, please.
Likewise, Mr. President, Senate Republicans have a full agenda, so please, colleagues, get your lunch and proceed directly to the caucus room. Thank you.
No further announcements without objection. The Senate is adjourned until 9:45 tomorrow, which is Wednesday, June 17th. The Senate is now adjourned.